To start current state today, an effort to repeal Michigan's 50-year prevailing wage law moved forward this week. On Tuesday, the State Board of Canvassers approved the form of a citizen petition that could put repeal to a vote in the state legislature. Meanwhile, the Michigan Senate has already passed such a measure and sent it to the House, but a citizen petition, if approved by the legislature, could not be vetoed by Governor Rick Snyder. The governor opposes repeal. For decades, the prevailing wage law has required payment of union-scale wages for workers on state-funded building projects. The group Protecting Michigan Taxpayers cites a study claiming that prevailing wage regulations cost taxpayers more than $224 million a year on construction projects alone. Supporters of the law say it benefits working families, does not increase total construction costs, and creates higher quality and more economical construction. There are an array of arguments on both sides involving prevailing wage. I want to explore both sides of this here today. I want to welcome our guest. Chris Fisher is the president of the Associated Building Contractors of Michigan. Welcome, Chris. And Mike Crawford is with NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association. He's the president of the Michigan chapter. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mark.
There are an array of arguments here, as I said, on both sides. Chris Fisher, let's start with you. In your own words, explain why you support a repeal of prevailing wage.
Well, our experience, Mark, is that prevailing wage in Michigan results in taxpayer-funded construction costing more than virtually any other type of construction in the state. When that happens, you have a significant fiscal accountability problem. When the same sorts of construction in the private sector is being done for less by the same workers under the same construction codes and under the same health and safety requirements, you have to wonder why is it that government construction and taxpayers are on the hook for an additional price tag. Mm-hmm. And we think that there's an opportunity to finally bring the government sector in line with the private sector, and we're excited to see this effort move forward to repeal the Prevailing Wage Act.
And Mike Crawford, broadly, why is keeping prevailing wage a desirable thing?
Michigan needs to keep the prevailing wage law intact for three reasons. Number one, we need to support strong, well-established apprenticeship training programs that help create the next generation of highly skilled construction workers. Governor Snyder and many, many legislators have been very focused on how important the skilled trades are in Michigan's rebounding economy. After all, when Colorado and Kansas repealed their prevailing wage law, they saw a 35% drop in apprenticeship training. Number two, the prevailing wage law levels the playing field between two groups of contractors that bid construction projects. The first group of contractors pays a wage and fringe package that reflects local community standards, and that helps support local community economies. Versus the second group of contractors that oftentimes lowball bid a project and then employ the cheapest possible labor to build it. I don't think that's how we want to build buildings in Michigan. The third issue, Michigan's prevailing wage law ensures that construction workers are paid a prevailing wage and fringe benefit package that typically includes adequate health care coverage and a pension program. Those are two vital important reasons because we don't need to have any more uncompensated health care be charged to our hospitals. And we don't want older construction workers becoming wards of the welfare state because they don't have a pension. So those are the three large reasons why Michigan's prevailing wage law supports the economy.
Mike, don't plenty of privately funded projects fare well enough, though, without these mandates? I mean, buildings get built responsibly and up to code, and workers are employed and get paid and get benefits. Isn't that true?
There are plenty of really great, responsible contractors out there. But when we start using taxpayer-funded projects, we have to hold those projects to a standard to ensure that the taxpayer is getting their money's worth. A prevailing wage law ensures that high-quality workers working for great contractors are building those buildings.
Chris Fisher, why don't you respond to those arguments?
I think it's important, Mark, to remember that prevailing wage does only exist within the bubble of government construction. It doesn't exist in the rest of the world. So I think maybe the best real-world example of what it's like without prevailing wage is the real world itself, where, as you point out, construction is successfully put into place day in and day out. We strongly recommend that construction users such as Michigan State University or the Michigan Department of Transportation are both fine examples of public entities that have what's called a pre-qualification process. That pre-qualification process ensures the highest level of contractors able to perform the work with a skilled workforce, and that's a best practice, and that exists in the real world absent prevailing wage. Prevailing wage is limited to, and I have a copy of the Act right here, is only limited to being a wage and benefit mandate. It doesn't mention training, not once. It doesn't mention quality, not once. It doesn't mention pensions, not once. It doesn't mention safety, not once. It's simply a wage. That's all it is. But the problem is, these wages mirror union agreements exclusively, and those supersede all other best practices throughout the construction industry, when the vast majority of the construction industry, mind you, isn't subject to any of these agreements, yet they have to abide by them. It becomes very problematic, very burdensome, red tape laden, and we think it makes Michigan uncompetitive. Most states don't have that requirement. 44 other states don't base a wage on union agreements only.
Chris Fisher of the Associated Building Contractors of Michigan joins Mike Crawford of the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Michigan chapter here. We're discussing prevailing wage on WKAR's Current State. Chris, defenders of prevailing wage fear that it would impact productivity, safety, and quality, as Mike Crawford has brought up. Another of those defenders, Mike Stoback of Barton Mallow Construction, appeared on this program 2 weeks ago, and he addressed that. He pointed to the previous repeal of prevailing wage back in the 1990s, and he says it created a more transient workforce and created problems. Let's listen to a bit of that.
If you receive what studies show to be a 25% reduction in your pay, you're going to look to enhance that any way you can. So in the middle of projects, we had people leaving jobs for other opportunities, wherever that may be. And it really created some serious interruptions to our projects and had a severe impact on meeting deadlines and retaining a well-trained, consistent workforce throughout the project.
Now, this is a guy in the construction industry just like you are. He has a very particular take on what unfolded when prevailing wage went away briefly in the 90s. How do you respond to that, those concerns?
I don't think I don't agree with it, with his concerns. We simply have not seen that to be the case throughout the broader construction industry. Our neighboring state of Ohio, for example, repealed prevailing wage on educational construction, all schools. And if that was the case, you would have all these construction workers from Michigan going down to Ohio to perform that schoolwork, for example. And it's simply not happening. When Michigan did eliminate prevailing wage because of a court case in the 1990s, we saw the experience to be a very positive experience. More construction jobs were created during that time period, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. Other states, when they got rid of prevailing wage, in fact, overall construction incomes went up in Ohio when they got rid of prevailing wage for educational construction. So we don't think the data points to there being any problems. We think the data points to makes a strong case in favor of repeal of prevailing wage.
Mike Crawford, you've pointed out that workmanship and quality would suffer if prevailing wage were repealed. I couldn't help but notice a letter in today's Free Press from a reader who says, repeal would open the door to less than reputable contractors who lowball the bidding process by paying their employees substandard wages with little or no benefits. You've made it clear you agree with that. Talk to me about quality, though, here, the quality of the workmanship. Whether you have a union crew or a non-union crew, don't state building codes still apply? And why doesn't that make quality a moot point in this discussion?
State building codes do apply, but on a construction project, construction inspectors cannot be on all the project all the time, overseeing every last bit of construction that's installed. And we support strong construction enforcement top to bottom, side to side. We've got some great construction inspectors, but they can't be there all the time. And when you have contractors that have decided to lowball bid a public project and use whatever cost-shaving way to cheapen up the job and employing the absolute cheapest possible labor, that's going to have an impact on quality. I just don't understand how you can expect a public project to be built without being mindful of the quality of the actual tradesperson on the project. And that's why quality is at risk. And again, I'll go back to what Mike Stoback said. Let's set aside all the studies, because for every study there is on one side, there's 10 studies on the other side. We can study this thing to death. Let's go back to Mike Stoback, who was a real-world school board member in the late 90s when it was judicially suspended, and he awards hundreds of millions of dollars of construction work to both union and non-union contractors. So I trust his experience when he saw quality, safety get to be a real problem, and the cost to the end user did increase, and that's an issue.
Let's revisit another really basic aspect of this thing, Mike. We had Republican Senator Mike Shirkey and Mike Stoback of Barton Malow Construction on the program here a week ago Friday, stirring this up. They were clearly at odds over what this does to competitiveness. Mr. Stoback claimed that during the repeal of prevailing wage back in the 90s, that it became all about price, and contractors left the business, reducing competitiveness. Senator Shirkey strongly disagreed. Why wouldn't the elimination of a higher wage mandate automatically make bidding more competitive? Those seem to go hand in hand.
What you will have is, if you repeal the prevailing wage, those contractors that have a workforce that have been through apprenticeship training programs, that are getting a pension and health and welfare program as part of their package, as apprenticeship training programs are part of their package, those contractors will be driven out of the market by those lowballing contractors paying people whatever they want to pay them, whether it's cash underneath the table or whatever tax avoidance mechanisms may be in play. And when contractors can't compete on a level playing field, they will pursue other markets where they can survive. We have seen this in several other kinds of construction work, where if the low price is the only criteria in determining who gets the project, heaven help that end customer, because that's going to be a problem. In the private sector, construction customers not only evaluate price, but they look at the value added. So when many, many customers in the private sector, when they decide to award a construction contract, they don't look at just price. They look at the actual installed value. And therein lies the ability for contractors who are paying people a fair wage with an appropriate fringe benefit package. They can compete and win those projects.
Mike Crawford of the National Electrical Contractors Association Michigan chapter joining me, along with Chris Fisher of the Associated Building Contractors of Michigan. We're talking about prevailing wage here on WKAR. Mike led with the defense of prevailing wage in terms of the apprenticeship training. Is that on your radar? Is that a concern here? Would apprenticeship and skilled trades in general take a hit? Why wouldn't it take a hit if prevailing wage were repealed?
It absolutely won't take a hit. What's being discussed is whether or not the applicability of the Prevailing Wage Act should continue to stay on the books in Michigan. Training is covered throughout other laws. Mike represents electrical contractors, for example. Every single electrician in the state of Michigan, regardless of whether they're doing prevailing wage work or not, regardless if they're union or not, have to go through the same rigorous requirements, the same rigorous training standards, pass the same rigorous exam, and meet the same rigorous building code, regardless of whether that's prevailing wage or not. We're not looking to touch that law or any other training mandates that exist. Not at all. The fact of the matter is, prevailing wage is a red tape nightmare. You could have an electrician in Ann Arbor who suddenly then goes to Brighton to perform work, and they're working under a totally different wage and benefit scheme. They then go to Howell, which is right next door, an entirely different wage and benefit scheme. There are thousands upon thousands of different mandates throughout the state of Michigan, and it makes the industry much less competitive because contractors are reluctant to get into that red tape difficulty.
Mike, last word. We got 30 seconds.
On the issue of multiple wage rates, therein lies the beauty of how collective bargaining wage rates establish a prevailing wage, because we bargain locally. My packages that we negotiate for Brighton, Ann Arbor, Jackson, Menominee, Marquette, they're dramatically different because we reflect the local standards that are bargained between labor and management. So we have those community standards being reflective.
We've got to leave it at that. We could talk longer, but we have to move on. We want to thank both of our guests. Mike Crawford is the Michigan chapter leader of the National Electrical Contractors Association, and Chris Fisher is president of the Associated Building Contractors of Michigan. Many thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.